we're going to do something since we just had, what was Friday? Friday, February 14th. Yeah, that lovey-dovey day, you know. In honor of post-Valentine's, now that we've all had our kisses and hugs and everything, and the arguments have started again, I want to do a message on communication. And this is actually kind of an altered version of things that I would do in my premarital class. But we've kind of redeveloped it and rehashed it. So we're going to talk about communication this morning. Let's start off with a story. About a century or two ago, the Pope decided that all the Jews had to leave the Vatican. Naturally, there was a big uproar from the Jewish community, so the Pope made a deal. He said he would have a religious debate with a member of the Jewish community. If the Jew won, the Jews could stay. If the Pope won, the Jews would leave. You follow me with this? Okay. So the Jews realized they had no choice. They picked a middle-aged man named Moshe to represent them. That's Yiddish for Moses. Moshe asked for one addition to the debate. To make it more interesting, neither side would be allowed to talk. And the Pope agreed. So the day of the great debate came. Moshe and the Pope sat opposite each other for a full minute before the Pope raised his hand and showed three fingers. Moshe looked back at him and raised one. The Pope waved his fingers in a circle around his head. Moshe pointed to the ground where he sat. The Pope pulled out a wafer and a glass of wine. Moshe pulled out an apple. The Pope stood up and said, "I give up. This man is too good. The Jews can stay." Well, an hour later, the cardinals were all around the Pope asking him what had happened. The Pope said, "Well, first I held up three fingers to represent the Trinity." He responded by holding up one finger to remind me that there is still one God common to both our religions. "Then I waved my finger around me to show him that God was all around us." He responded by pointing to the ground and showing that God was also right here with us. I pulled out the wine and the wafer to show that God absolves us from our sins. He pulled out an apple to remind me of original sin. He had an answer for everything. What could I do? Meanwhile, the Jewish community had crowded around Moshe. "What happened?" they asked. "Well," said Moshe, "first he said to me that the Jews had 3 days to get out of here. I told him that not one of us was leaving. Then he told me that this whole city would be cleared of the Jews. I let him know that we were staying right here." "Well, and then what?" asked a woman. "I don't know," said Moshe. "He took out his lunch and I took out mine." Good communication is hard. It's also pretty rare, I think. It's so easy to misunderstand each other. So easy to misunderstand each other. My hope is that this morning, maybe we might have a little better clue about some godly ideas of what good communication should be all about. I, as I was working on this and putting stuff together, I went through, like, I don't know, 20 years worth of notes and was finding every time I taught on communication and pulled it all together. And I had about 25 pages worth of notes. And I know I got to get it down to 7 for the morning. So we're going to cut some stuff out, okay? And what I'm going to do is I just want to share with you 10 of the things. This almost sounds like a David Hawking sermon, doesn't it? There'll be 10 points this morning. So if you're writing things down, you leave space for 10 things to write down. And I want to share just 10 things about good communication. Number one is this. Speak carefully. Speak carefully. Let's look at the book of Proverbs. We'll probably be in Proverbs a lot this morning. Probably. I know that we're going to be in Proverbs a lot. And I want you to see some of these verses. Proverbs 15, verse 28. Proverbs 15, verse 28. Solomon writes, "The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things." The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Look at chapter 29, verse 20. Just one more. Proverbs 29, verse 20. It says, "Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words? There is more hope of a fool than of him." Speak carefully. You know this. You can't take back words once they're out. We wished we could. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been in the conversation and you're talking? And by the way, I just want to say this right up front, because my wife's sitting over there. I am not an expert at any one of these 10 points, okay? I don't want you to say, like, you know, think, you know, because some of you know me better. Some of you go, okay, what are you teaching this on, pal? You could learn this too. Absolutely, absolutely. So let me just say this. Have you ever, you've said things, haven't you, that as it's coming out of your mouth and you see the black cloud developing over the other person and you think to yourself, I can't believe I'm saying this. Oh, I wish I could take that back. Don't you wish you could just, like, rewind and cut the tape, you know? You can't. Speak carefully. Speak carefully. For some of us, our relationships will grow a whole lot stronger if you slow down when you respond. Speak carefully. I think sometimes, depending on when you've got something really, really important to say, hey, don't go rushing in on it, you know? Sometimes I know when I've got something that, boy, it's a difficult thing I've got to say to a person. Had this happen just the other day. And it's something that I've been waiting weeks to talk to a person about. And you know what? I'm glad I waited. Wait for the right time. Wait for the, so you know how you're going to, take time to think about what you're going to do. Speak carefully. Number two, speak the truth. Speak the truth. Proverbs 12:22. Proverbs 12:22. Solomon says, "Lying lips are abomination to the Lord, and they that deal truly are his delight." Lying lips are abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Now, you might think, well, of course I always tell the truth. Except, you know, there's those times where you're kind of caught in a situation, and am I going to tell the person the truth, or am I going to kind of fudge a little bit? And see, sometimes the tendency is I know what that's like. I get caught in those kind of situations, and boy, I have so regretted fudging on this person. You know, when I've got I think of times where I've really had a problem with somebody, and they come to me and they say, "Do you have a problem with me?" Oh no, I'm just fine. I just love you to pieces. Don't have any problems. And I wished later, you know, that was the time. That was the opportunity. You know. The problem is that when your lie catches up to you, you've lost your credibility. And the next time you say something, the person's going to think, because I've had this happen to me, when somebody's lied to my face, and you probably think, oh, nobody lies to your face, you're the pastor. You know what? They lie to me all the time. I have learned that I get lied to probably more than anybody, because people think, well, you're the pastor, can't tell you what's really going on. But you know what? It catches up to you. And when they find out that you've lied before, they don't say, hey, you're telling me what? Oh, sure, yeah, right. But just stay that far away from me. Don't get too close. You know, the story of the little boy who cried wolf. You know, the little boy that was out tending the sheep. And he got kind of lonesome. So he said, "Wolf, wolf, there's a wolf out with the sheep." And everybody from town came out to find out. And there was nothing out there. And the kid had some company, but everybody left. And then he cries wolf again. And, you know the story, right? Eventually, when a wolf did show up and he needed help and he cried wolf, nobody paid attention. Speak the truth. Ephesians 4:15 says, "But speaking the truth in love, we may grow up into Him in all things, which is the head, even Christ." Now, in the context there, this is in the middle of one of Paul's long run-on sentences. Because his sentences, Paul tends to, he never took English grammar. He just like writes the longest sentences in the world. And in the middle of this, this is all about how the Ephesian church was kind of, they were immature. They were like children. And he says they were like tossed here and there by every new wind of doctrine that came along. They had this immaturity about them. And he said, you know what? You need to grow up. And the way you grow up, he says in Ephesians 4:15, is speaking the truth in love. That is one of the keys, beloved, to growing up. And it's not just about speaking the truth, but it's hearing the truth. We'll talk about that in a minute. So number two is speak the truth. Speak carefully. Number two, speak the truth. Number three, I want to encourage you to let God be a part of your communication. Let God be a part of your communication. In 2 Corinthians 5:20, you don't have to turn there. I'll just read it to you. It says, "Now then we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God did beseech you by us, we pray you in Christ's stead, be reconciled to God." And I don't know if you followed that. But he's saying, we're God's ambassadors, and God's speaking to you through us. God is the king, and he sent us on a mission. We are his ambassadors, and the king has a message for you. Now, yes, he's talking about preaching the gospel. Yes, he's talking about sharing your faith. But you know what? I think, I wish so much more of my communication. I wish God was a part of it. I wish I was making him a part of it. There's a story about 1936. There's a radio broadcast was being planned to be transmitted to America from England. And it was a broadcast with King Edward VIII. And just before he was about to be heard, someone in the studio in New York of WJZ, which is now WABC, somebody tripped over the wire and snapped the only line of communication between the continents. The engineers were frantic. And then within a few moments remaining before airtime, a quick-thinking apprentice grasped the two broken ends of the wire and bridged the gap. I don't know if he shook during the whole thing. Seconds later, the king addressed the nation. In a real sense, his words, the king's words, were being transmitted through the body of that man. That's kind of a cool picture. I like that picture. Because, see, that's what God wants to do in us. God wants to work through us. He wants to be a part of our communication. And not just strictly when we're talking about sharing our faith, but you know what? In a sense, you're sharing your faith 24 hours a day, whether you realize it or not. Whether you're mentioning the name of Jesus, whether you're talking about him dying on the cross or not, you're sharing your faith. People are watching you. We want to have God be a part of our communication. Let God be a part of your communication. Number four, look at Genesis 11. Interesting story, and I thought it would be good to look at this. In Genesis chapter 11, this is the story of during man's early history. This is before the continents broke apart. This is while the continents were still a single continent. And everybody spoke the same language. And at this time in Genesis 11, mankind started getting pretty proud, pretty puffed up. And they thought that they'd march right up into God's front door, you know. And so what they built this tower, and we call it the Tower of Babel. And it says in Genesis 11, verse 6, it says, "And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." These people are just causing themselves all kinds of trouble. go to, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city, and the name of it was called Babel, and that's where modern Babylon is. But it started, they called it Babel because no people couldn't understand each other. Communication was cut off. What caused it? Well, God caused it. Well, yeah, but what was the root behind it? Their pride. So that's number four. Pride blocks communication. Now, how does that work? I think one of the ways it works is this. I do something stupid, and let's say I do something stupid and hurt Victor's feelings. I do something, and Victor just can't believe it. I can't believe that Rich did this to me. But because I am Mr. I'm the pastor, man, you know. And because I am too proud to say I'm sorry, what happens? There's a break. There's a communication gap. Pride blocks communication. Sometimes we don't say the things, we don't do the things that we should because, man, we're all caught up in ourself. My rights, my pride. Pride blocks communication. I think the opposite is that humility helps communication. But that's number four. Pride blocks communication. Number five, speak clearly. Speak clearly into the headpiece. Speak clearly. I do this all the time. I think sometimes when we have a hard time just coming out and saying what we mean, and so we dance around the subject and we drop hints about what we're thinking. And the problem is that communication gets pretty risky. On the morning of the first atomic bomb test near White Sands, New Mexico, two Indian brothers sat looking across the mesa, observing the great blast and the resulting mushroom cloud. One Indian says to another, "I wish I'd said that." Okay, I didn't get a very good laugh first service either. I think sometimes we think we're communicating, but all I'm doing is just blowing smoke at you. You know, and I'm not really saying anything that's clear. Because I don't want to like really exactly say I did but instead I kind of like hint at it. We need to speak clearly. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. We see this here in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Now, in 1 Corinthians 14, Paul is talking about the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And how they ought to be operated in the church. He gives rules for how the gifts ought to be operated in the church. And in this passage we're going to read, he's talking about the gift of tongues. The gift of tongues is when the Holy Spirit gives someone a supernatural ability to speak in a language that they've never learned. They don't know what they're saying, it's just the words comes out. It should be or is often accompanied by a gift of the interpretation of tongues, and where so you would speak something out and then somebody else is given the interpretation the same way supernaturally. This is what we call the gift of tongues. And so Paul teaches on this, but there's a principle here that I think is so cool about this. Look in 1 Corinthians 14 verse 7. He says, "And even things without life, giving sound, whether pipe or harp, except they give a distinction in the sounds, how shall it be known what is piped or harped?" I did this first service. Let's try this again. Now, let's say I was to say to you, let's sing this worship song, okay? Are you ready? Let's sing this worship song. I got to turn this up. Why aren't you singing? Because you have... I didn't play distinctly. And yet, on the other hand, if I played a melody that you recognized, then you'd pick up and you'd start singing along. He goes on and he says, verse 8, For if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself to battle? Now, trumpets were used before the modern communication gears. And so instead of having a headset or walkie-talkie or whatever, you know, you'd blow the trumpet and a certain pattern meant we charge, and a certain pattern meant we retreat, and a certain pattern means wake up in the morning, and it means different things. But he says if the guy is a really bad trumpeter and he just goes whap, you know, nobody's going to know what to do. He says, verse 9, so likewise, ye, except ye utter by the tongue words easy to be understood, how shall it be known what is spoken? For ye shall speak into the air. There are, it may be, so many kinds of voices of the world, and none of them is without signification. In other words, every language means something. Therefore, if I know not the meaning of the voice, I shall be unto him that speaketh a barbarian, and he that speaketh shall be a barbarian unto me. And the word barbarian in the Greek is barbar. The reason it's barbar is because to the hoity-toity Greeks who sip their tea with their finger out, you know, all proper, when they hear somebody, you know, from Gaul or France speaking, you know, or somebody from Scotland, you know, and they hear this brogue, you know, and it's just like, oh, to them it's just bar, 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 bar. Just nonsense. It's nothing. He says, verse 12, even so ye, forasmuch as ye are zealous of spiritual gifts, seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church. Wherefore, let him that speaketh in an unknown tongue pray that he may interpret. Now, see, the tough thing is that sometimes when we're not speaking in tongues, we're speaking in English. The problem is that sometimes I think we need the gift of interpretation to figure out what we're saying to each other. But the whole point is, you know, don't just speak clearly. Say what you mean. Mean what you say. Speak clearly. A man writes, about 5 years ago, the battery of my beat-up VW Beetle had died because I left the lights on overnight. I was in a hurry to get on to work on time, so I ran into the house to get my wife to give me a hand to start the car. I told her to get into our second car, a prehistoric oversized gas guzzler, and use it to push my car fast enough to start it. I pointed out to her that because the VW had an automatic transmission, it needed to be pushed at least 30 miles an hour for it to start. She said, fine, hopped into her car, and drove off. I sat there fuming, wondering what she could be doing. A minute passed by, and I saw her in the rearview mirror coming at me about 40 miles an hour. And I realized I should have been a bit clearer with my directions. Speak clearly. Speak clearly. Number 6. I hope this will probably sound offensive to some of you. I'm sorry. Number 6. Learn to shut up once in a while. Learn to shut up once in a while. Proverbs 10:19. It says, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. That's Proverbs 10:19. Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. You know, a fool, I'll just tell you everything that's on my mind, whether it's good or not, you know, and he says, you know, just zip it. One of Pastor Chuckisms, it's better to keep silent and let them think you're a fool than to open your mouth and dispel all doubt. I remember years ago when I was a youth pastor at the Baptist Church. There were three of us who, one guy did junior high group, I did the senior high group, another guy did the college group. And we were kind of overseen by one of the assistant pastors, a guy named Dave Burns. And he was 5-10 years older than us. And he's somebody that I grew to admire as a wise man. And one of the qualities to me that always, we would meet once a week in the library in the church. And things would come up, questions would come up, and I'd always be one of the first ones to fire off an answer and a Bible verse and this and that, you know, and I was usually wrong. Usually said something stupid, something I wish I hadn't said that, you know. And Dave hardly ever spoke until at the end. And then he'd speak, and we'd all go, oh, yeah. He was a guy, not that I've learned that much from him, but you know what? I've always loved that example to me in my life. Sometimes I just need to be quiet. Sometimes I just better not say anything. Words are dangerous. James 3:5 says, so also the tongue is a small thing. But what enormous damage it can do. A tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. In 1995, in September, a squirrel climbed onto the Metro North Railroad power lines near New York City. This set off an electrical surge. Now, I wonder if it also fried the squirrel. I don't know. It doesn't say. It set off an electrical surge, which weakened an overhead bracket, which let a wire dangle towards the track, which tangled in a train, which tore down all the lines. And in the end, 47,000 commuters were stranded for hours because of one little squirrel. Now, that's a good picture of what our words do sometimes. So sometimes, even though, you know, this morning's all about communication in all of our relationships, I hope, you know, you don't think this is all about marriage. It is, but it's beyond that. It's about all of our relationships. And though we want to communicate better, sometimes the best thing to do is to just zip it up. Number seven, Proverbs 15:1. Look at Proverbs 15, verse 1. I'm in 1 Corinthians. No wonder that doesn't make sense. Proverbs 15:1. Here we go. King James says, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The American Standard says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. This is the point. Your words can resolve or continue a fight. It can. Not necessarily, but it can. Your words can resolve or continue a fight. Let's see, I want to talk about buttons, pockets, and fire. Okay, buttons, pockets, and fire. You will find in all of your relationships that the closer you get to a person, the more buttons you uncover. Now, what am I talking about? These are little devices that have a little red hat on, a little red top on it, and it says, do not press except in case of nuclear war. Sometimes they have a locked cover on it. It requires a key to insert, you know, and you get a call from the president and he says, push the button, you stick the key and you flip open the lid and you, boom! Okay. Now, what those buttons are in reality are usually the things that win the argument. It's that one thing you kind of tripped over once in that relationship with that person. You kind of accidentally found out about something in their life that devastates them. Maybe it's a sin in their past. Maybe it's a hurt that they've had. Maybe it's that they did something to you that they really owe you. And so there's the button. There's the button. And so what happens? You get into the arguments, you get into the fight, and you go, well, I think blah, 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 blah. And they say, well, I think blah, 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 blah. And you think, well, blah, 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 blah. And they say, no, blah, 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 blah. And you sit there and you think, I'm losing this argument. I can't lose the argument. What am I going to do? Quick, get the keys out. Quick, fumble, insert key, open lid, press. Button, boom! Do you remember when you did this? And suddenly, the nuclear cloud is forming over their head, and they're going, you win the argument, I quit. Buttons. And you know what? When you are married, don't ever press the buttons. Don't ever press the buttons. You may accidentally stumble on them, and you may be totally, when you stumble across it, you may be totally, wow, I didn't know you had a problem here. But you know what? You lock that sucker up and encase it in concrete. Don't you ever go near that button. Because that's one of those times where you're going to wish you had been quiet. Probably won't talk to you for weeks or months. And that's not a good thing. See, you have a choice. When you're in an argument, you have two pockets to pull from. You have two pockets to pull from. I got one pocket marked harsh words. I got another pocket marked cough drops. No. I've got another one marked soft answers. And you know what? Nobody ever twists your arm to use the harsh words. That's your choice. Why couldn't like those little perfume candles, and so you lit the candle and there's the match and you don't pay attention, you throw the match into your trash can underneath your desk and a little fire starts. Whoa! Look at this fire! And there happen to be two canisters of liquid sitting in the corner of your desk, and they're on your office. One of them is marked water, the other one's marked gasoline. Which one are you going to pick? What are you going to throw onto the fire? The gasoline! Burn, baby, burn! No. Not if you like your desk and your office and your work. Yeah, gasoline! You have a choice. Now, again, I didn't say you will resolve an argument. I did not say, I said can. Because there's another person involved. But I'll tell you what, it's so much easier to resolve an argument when somebody's pouring water on it than when both people are pouring gas on it. You have a choice. You have a choice. Colossians 4:6 says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer every man. I think I am one of the most critical people that God has ever created. You know, I tend to find fault in just about anything and everybody. And you know what? I need to learn to put grace into my words. That's like pouring water on the fire. Now, it's number eight. Look at Proverbs 12, verse 1. Proverbs 12, verse 1. Proverbs 12, verse 1. This is what I don't like. Proverbs 12, verse 1. Whoso loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof is brutish. That sounds like something from an old 30s movie. Oh, you big brute, you. It means stupid. It's not what kind of aftershave you wear. It's not brutish. It's stupid. He who hateth reproof is stupid. New American Standard says, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. Now, the point is this. This is number eight. Be open to hearing hard things. Be open to hearing hard things. Of all the 10 things, this is probably one of the ones I got to work on the most. Be open to hearing hard things. You know, some of us are very pleasant to communicate with, as long as you tell me nice things. if you come up to me at the end of my sermon and say, boy, you just tell great jokes. Oh, I just love your jokes. You're going to be my friend forever. Okay? Okay. But if you say, Rich, that one joke you told about, that stunk. You know, you tell too many jokes, you know, and I'm going to like, well, yeah, like, get out of here, you know. Be open to hearing hard things. When someone criticizes you, we need to be careful that we don't do the knee-jerk reaction of firing back. That's probably what I tend to do. You know, you criticize me, and I'll think, well, quick, file, search, criticism on the person in front of me, you know, and I'm searching frantically, oh yeah! Well, what about this with you? Oh. You know, we do the Three Stooges thing. We go, woo, 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 you know, boink, you know, and whoa, whoa, I'll get you, woo, 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 I'll show you, woo, 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 you know, and we play this tit for tat thing. And what happens? What was Ephesians 4:15? Speaking the truth in love, that's how we grow up. But if no one can dare speak the truth to you, you're never going to grow up. If no one has permission to say in love, you know, I think you got to work on this, you won't grow up. You're hurting yourself. You think you're protecting yourself. You think you're well, it hurts too much. I don't want people hurting me. But you're hurting yourself because you won't grow. We're going to do on Sunday night in a few weeks, we're going to start a class on spiritual leadership. And there's this wonderful book, this classic book by J. Oswald Sanders that we're going to do. And in this book, he writes this: Samuel Brengel, noted for his sense of holiness, felt the heat of caustic criticism. Instead of rushing to defend himself, he replied, "From my heart, I thank you for your rebuke. I think I deserved it. Will you, my friend, remember me in prayer?" When another critic attacked his spiritual life, Brengel replied, "I thank you for your criticism of my life. It set me to self-examination and heart-searching and prayer, which always leads me in a deeper sense of my utter dependence on Jesus for holiness of heart and into sweeter fellowship with Him." I'm not sure I'm there yet, but I want to be. Certainly want to be. Do you have friends? Here's kind of a test of this. Do you have friends who have permission to say hard things to you? Who says hard things to you and you let them? No, I'm not talking about who says hard things. Yeah, your wife does, or yeah, your husband does. I understand. Okay. But who says hard things and you let them? You receive it. Proverbs 27:6 says, Proverbs 27:6, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." You will find that there will be people who will always be kissing up to you, always telling you sweet things because they want something from you. I hear it all the time. But a true friend is the one who will, at times, yes, carefully, yes, cautiously, yes, reluctantly, yes, lovingly, but someone who will say a hard thing. Be open to hearing hard things. Number nine, we're almost done. Number nine, this is probably the most important one, though, is seek to understand. Seek to understand. Proverbs 18:13. King James says, Proverbs 18:13, it says, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him." New American Standard says, "He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and a shame to him." Now, I think it goes beyond just audibly hearing something. I think it talks about understanding. A person that responds before they really understand what you're saying says it's a folly and a shame to him. This would happen to King David, and you don't have to turn there, but in 1 Chronicles 19, there's this story where one of David's friends, a man named Nahash, passed away. He was an older guy, and he died, and he was David's friend. And David, the king, David was king at this time, he sent his ambassadors to Nahash's son named Hanun, and he sent these ambassadors to Hanun to just say, you know what, you've been my, you know, your family's been good to me, and we heard that your pop died, and we just want you to know that whatever we can do to help, we're here for you. Well, when these ambassadors showed up, some of Hanun's counselors said, they're not here to help you. They're here to spy out. They're going to attack. Any moment, they're going to attack. You better do something to show them who you are. And so Hanun took these ambassadors of the king. He cut their beards off. And in those days, that was horrible. He cut their beard off. And then, even worse, he cut their clothes off from the waist down and sent them home that way. I mean, talk about embarrassing. Talk about embarrassing. A war developed. All because of what? Hanun never took time to understand what was really going on. He didn't take time to really hear the message. To seek to understand. I think communication works this way. I think this is how communication works. I think that there's four steps. I may be wrong. It's just my little peon brain. So I will simplify this in my peon brain. Okay. I think there's four steps to communication. I think the first step is if I'm going to say something to Frank, I'm going to communicate. Frank, you and I are going to communicate. Well, the first step is I got to think of what I'm going to communicate. That's usually the step. It's something we don't think about, but we do. Well, we do think. I think. This message. Oh, I got to tell Frank this. I think of something. Second thing I do is I express it to Frank. Now, I might send him an email. I might write him a letter. I might call him up on the phone. I might go, you know, and do hand signals. I might go, you know, I could do all kinds of things, but I express the communication. Thirdly, the next two are on his part. Thirdly, Frank will receive it. Now, it might be he boots up his computer and checks his email. There's my message. And he reads it. It might be that he opens up the mail, and there's my letter. He might just be hearing me. He might be seeing me. He receives it. And then lastly, he interprets it. He's got to take the message, and he's going to make it sense. He's going to have it make sense the way he thinks it makes sense. Are you following me? It's just like the old World War II days, you know, when they would put coded messages on a pigeon, and they'd send it across the English Channel, and it would arrive at home, and they'd take the message off, and they'd decode it. Well, this is what happens. This is how communication works. The problem is that each one of these four steps can get fouled up. For example, the first step, me thinking. Sometimes I start talking before I've really thought about what I'm talking about. You probably never do that, but I kind of start off on a subject, and I go down a road, and I think, this is really stupid. What in the world am I talking about this for? And I wished I had just thought about it before I died. Sometimes it's the thinking. Sometimes it's we know what we're trying to say, it just comes out wrong. Like these are some signs, odd signs they found in England. Here's a sign that was spotted in a safari park. Elephants, please stay in your car. I thought it was good. Sign on a repair shop door. We can repair anything. Please knock hard on the door. The bell doesn't work. Would you take your stuff to them? Or how about this one? A sign on outside a secondhand shop. We exchange anything. Bicycles, washing machines, etc. Why not bring your wife along and get a wonderful bargain? I don't think it came out the way they meant. You know, sometimes we express it wrong. Sometimes the receiver doesn't hear it right. Sometimes you know, I got a bad connection. You know, I'm driving through the dead zone on Bass and Cherry, and you can't quite hear me, and you get every other word, you know, on the cell phone. Sometimes guys were watching TV, you know, and there's that game or that movie or whatever that thing, and we're just locked in. Guy, I don't know, you probably are like this. I'm just like, I focus. I really make sure that I get the most out of every movie that I watch. I just, yeah. And my wife will walk by, and honey, I'm going to go to the store. Oh, yeah, sure. I'm going to go get some groceries. And usually what she does is she'll say, and the cow jumped over the moon. You know, and she'll start saying nonsense. I'll go, yeah, sure, yeah, whatever, you know. And I'm going to go out and buy a Lexus. Yeah, sure, whatever you want, dear. That's fine. Just leave me alone. I want to watch it. So, you know, and sometimes we aren't really paying attention. Sometimes we don't interpret it correctly. You know, it's been thought out, it's been expressed, it's been received, but I didn't quite put the pieces together correctly. One Sunday morning, a pastor noticed old Johnny was standing, staring at the large plaque that hung in the foyer of the church. The young man he was a young man of seven brothers, had been staring at the plaque for some time. So the pastor walked up and stood beside him, and gazing at the plaque, he said quietly, "Good morning, son." Good morning, pastor, replied the young man, not taking his eyes off the plaque. Sir, what is this? Johnny asked. Well, son, these are all the people who have died in service, replied the pastor. Soberly, this dude stood there staring at the plaque, and little Johnny's voice quivered, and he said, was that the 9 o'clock or the 11 o'clock? I want to share with you something I call it a tool, and I give this, I call this tool feedback. Maybe you've heard this before. Nothing new about this, nothing new at all. It is a tool. It is only as good as you are with the tool. You know, years ago there was a brother at Calvary Anaheim who was like a master carpenter. I mean, you could give him a hammer and a chisel, and you know, he's just like you, buddy. You know, he can make anything, and the scrolling work and all this kind of stuff. This guy was just fantastic. You give me the same tools, and you get a pile of wood chips. You know, the tool is only as good as the person that's using it and how good you are. So this is not a fix-all. This is not going to fix your problems necessarily, unless you learn how to use this. Okay, this is a tool. It's called feedback. And it's basically four words, four little words. I heard you say. That's the words. Write those down. I heard you say. And the way it works like this, it can work a couple of different ways. Let's say you and I are talking with each other, and you say something to me about blah, 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 and suddenly I'm getting angry. I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you. And the hair's going up on the back of my head, and I'm getting red, and I'm getting flushed. And we ought to install a little early warning device on us or something that says, warning, may have misunderstood, something like that. Because if I would stop, catch my breath, and say, I heard you say that you didn't like the way I did, blah, 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 blah. You will be surprised at some of the things you will hear. Now, sometimes you'll go, well, that's exactly right. I know my heart. But you know what? Often, you've just misunderstood. Oh, no, that's not what I meant at all. And we get so foolish. That's what the verse is, Proverbs. I'm so foolish to respond when I haven't taken the time to hear and understand. You can use it the other way around. Sometimes you're in a conversation, and as you're talking, you observe in them. Your sensors are out. You know, the radar is going, whoop, 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 and you notice their temperature is rising. It's going to boiling level. You see the blood coming up like this, and they start using harsh words with you, and you think, wait a second, I was just saying I was going to take out the trash. What's the problem here? Turn it around. Excuse me, but what did you hear me say? And again, you might be surprised. You might be surprised at what you hear. Beloved, sometimes the arguments that we have with each other, we just haven't heard what's going on. Take time to hear. Take time to understand. I heard you say. Now, there's so much more I could talk about communication. I could talk about how we need not to wait forever to talk to someone. Sometimes we need to take advantage of the situation. We will lose our opportunity sometimes. Sometimes we wait too long. I could talk about how our I could go on forever. But one last point, number 10, is this. Give more than words. Give more than words. 1 John 3:18 says, "My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." It's been Valentine's Day, and some of you got love in the air, and that's what you're thinking of. But this is not just about the lovey-dovey things. It's in all our relationships. Don't just send a card. I sent the Hallmark card. You know, I even paid $5 for it. So, of course, that was probably the cheap one nowadays, aren't they? give more than words. We need to be careful that when we talk to others, when we talk about loving them, that it's not just talk. You know, he says, love not in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Now, if I was to give an example or an illustration of this, there's one illustration that is by far the best of all time, and that is our God. Because he's not just a bunch of words, but he has demonstrated his love towards us. See, we've got a major problem in communication with God. That problem is called sin. We have this deal, and it cuts off. It's like a dead zone. It's like driving down Bass and Cherry, and you go and you cut off the communication. That's what our sin does. Psalm 66:18 says, "If I regard or hold on to iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me." Talk about a breakdown in communication. And you know what? God didn't just send me a Hallmark card. You know, love to just patch things up. Let's meet for lunch, you know. God did a whole lot more than send a Hallmark card. He sent his Son. Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Don't just love with words. Love with actions. So we've got 10 things here. Speak carefully. Speak the truth. Let God be a part of your communication. Pride blocks communication. Speak clearly. Learn to shut up once in a while. Your words can resolve or continue a conflict. Be open to hearing.